Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show here on the Land of Israel Network. Thank you so much for joining me. We are broadcasting live from the Land of Israel to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. Right now, I'm in beautiful Hebron. That's the burial place of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the matriarchs. It's the place where King David begins his kingdom, where he reigns over Israel. This is the first capital of Israel, and where I am international spokesman. Please check out our site, Hebron.com. And we have an amazing show for you today on the Land of Israel, on the Yishai Fleisher Show. And it's going to include, first, Spiritual Cafe with Rabbi Mike Foyer. And this is a really good one this week. I'm really proud of this one because the Torah portion is a hard one. A lot of technical things that are just seem to be, on the first glance, not relevant today. Rabbi Mike Foyer on Spiritual Cafe will help us make it relevant. And then we're going to go to an incredible awards ceremony for the Israel Video Network. We're going to learn about some of the best pro-Israel films that have been created recently, with really a young cadre of immigrants to the Land of Israel, people who really care, and also the Israel Video Network itself. What does it do? How does it reach out to the world? So we have a great show for you today, and I want you to always stay a part of the show, stay a part of the network, stay a part of Israel, be part of the story. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Stay in touch with me via Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or YouTube, whatever you want. Most importantly, keep me in your prayers. I'm keeping you in my prayers. We're going to be part of the same story together, and we're going to start with the show right about now. Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. And you're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom, and welcome to the landofisrael.com radio network and media network. This is the Yishai Fleisher Show, and we are at Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov in the heart of Jerusalem's Nachlaot neighborhood. This amazing institution is where beautiful light of Torah comes out to the world. And this portion of our show is always called Spiritual Cafe, and it's with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the show.
It's great to see you, Shai.
It's great to be here. I don't feel so good today, Rabbi Mike, physically speaking. I'm a little bit under the weather, head full of cold and all that kind of stuff. I've trudged over here to do a little radio with you because this is how to prepare for this Torah portion. And we also have a very special holiday coming up this Shabbat. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And one of the challenges in the book of Leviticus is that right here, somewhere around the middle of the book of Leviticus, before we get to the laws of torts, and the laws of criminal punishment and the laws of theft and the laws of sexual morality and immorality and all these things that actually we have a grasp on, we understand what they are because they're part of our life, there are sections in the book of Leviticus that seem to be things that we just don't really deal with on a day-to-day basis. We talked a little bit about the korbanot, the offerings, the animal sacrifices. And yet, even animal sacrifices, you could make a kind of, you kind of get it, because you eat animals.
That's how you have a visceral connection to it.
Right, and you can understand what it means for an animal to die. You've seen a dead animal on the side of the road or whatever it is.
And we are still serving God. I mean, the general category of the sacrifices is avodah, is service. So though we primarily do it through prayer today, the nature of the relationship is still there.
Right, but when it comes to the topic that we're going to cover today, which is, what do we call these things?
Biblical leprosy?
Right, they don't...
I mean, in Hebrew, there are negaim.
Negaim.
Right, and a nega is always a blow. But what's really interesting is it can also mean a coming up against or an encounter. So it's really
it's a boo boo. I just want to describe it first for people. We're talking
about a wound.
It's some kind of wound.
Boil.
A boil. A white spot. And what it certainly is not is some kind of disease that you need to be quarantined for on a very physical sense that it will be communicated to another person.
Infectious disease.
Right. It's definitely not that, and that's very clear from the laws because. For example, if somebody has that infectious disease during one of the major holidays, the festival holidays, the Kohen does not, the spiritual doctor does not look at it. Meaning to say, we don't look at it on the holiday not to ruin the holiday. We look at it afterwards, but you're going to be mingling with people. We're not concerned
that you're going to be able to pass this through the regular mode of infection.
That's because we see it as an expression of God's will and not simply an
epidemiological
problem.
So what we're talking about here are spiritual boo-boos that happen to you when you do bad. Now, the first thing is that how are we supposed to look at these kind of makot, these kind of wounds? On the one hand, you know, when you stub your toe, it's like, damn it. You're like, oh, you're jumping up and down. You're cursing like a sailor, like Popeye or something. You're like, oh. But the Torah wants us to think something different about getting a wound of some kind. It wants us to remember that God is kind of sending us a little signal. Fix your ways. Don't turn in that direction. I don't like the direction you're going to. Or in this case, more specifically, I don't like what's coming out of your mouth. Now, is that something positive or is that something negative? When I get that stub of my toe, I feel a lot of negativity at first. But maybe the real perspective is, wow, God saw it fit to communicate with me and to give me a little, as they say in Yiddish, a patch, a little slap, a little flick, to get me back on the right path.
So perhaps a little bit of historical perspective on tzara'at, on this these, as you call them, divine boo-boos, right? We see the appearance here in Leviticus. In these two portions, very intensive description of the nature of what they look like and how to identify and how to categorize. And then in the narrative portions of the rest of the Bible, we see a few key stories regarding kings of Israel. We actually get one more story here in the Bible itself regarding Miriam, Moshe's sister. We see a few key stories in the Bible. And what unites them all consistently is that people in positions of importance who do wrong in sensitive situations, that the tzara'at, these nega'im, these blemishes, come forth as a sign of God's disfavor. So in that sense, I think it contains the answer to your question, which is that all negative actions have consequence. And, you know, the sages teach us that the source of these blemishes is what we call lashon hara. Right, evil tongue is speaking ill of others. It's actually specifically speaking ill of others, even though it's true, which is something even more refined. I mean, it's simple in mind of the Torah that lying is wrong. But here we're speaking about saying things which are true about others, which cast them in a bad light, which arouse bad feelings.
Which are damaging.
Which are damaging in some way or another. And the reason it's so important that to have that historical context is that at a certain point the sages say that lashon hara, that evil speech became so common that God actually removed this punishment. So it's strange. You think, well, when things get out of hand, the punishment
that's where the kibosh comes down.
Right, exactly. The punishment should get more severe. But in that, you can see that it's not just a punishment, it's actually a blessing. As is true really on some level of all punishments, because it is an expression of divine care. I mean, you're a parent. Right, and you understand that our aspiration when we punish our children is always for their good. Okay, we all have our moments of anger and weakness, and I pretend to be perfect. But the general goal, right, I think is summed up in the prophets. Right, if you look in Amos, one of the most important lines in my mind in the latter prophets is that Amos says, "Only you amongst all the families of the world have I known," says God. So what's the follow up to that line? Therefore, what? I will punish you for your sins. Right, because it is an expression of love. Because if when you do wrong, it doesn't hurt, there's no consequence, then you'll never know that it's wrong and you won't then cease and do right. And so this whole Torah portion, in my mind, is consistent with the rest of the book of Leviticus, which is expressing the intimacy of the divine concern that Am Yisrael be a holy people.
When you're a servant to the king, the closer you are, the more you can get a smack.
For sure.
If you mess up. And that's really a part of the inner narrative of the Bible, which is, I love you, but you're close to me, so you're also going to quote unquote suffer, or you're gonna see also my wrath side because you're very, very close to me, and I'm judgmental.
My expectations of you are very high.
That's right. That's right. That's one issue that you brought up, and the other issue is that if you ask the average Gentile what is Judaism about, they'll tell you it's about the Sabbaths. They'll tell you about maybe circumcision. They'll tell you maybe about side locks or any external, you know, looks. And it's certainly about eating kosher, things that make us make Jewish people evidently different than the Gentiles, and maybe putting on phylactery tefillin. There's a lot of these things that, that you know you can identify Jewish people as. That and Seinfeld and bagels. That's what Judaism is, and in Israel, falafel.
Which, by the way, is true for the average Jew as well.
That's right. That's the average Jew might say that as well. But what you may not know as a Gentile, or maybe if you're an average Jew or not yet a fully learned Jew, is that the issues of cleanliness of speech are a big deal. And one example is one of the greatest teachers in the a little bit before the modern era, the Chafetz Chaim, 100 years ago in Raden, was a great Torah scholar, wrote a compendium to the Shulchan Aruch, teaching all of Torah law. But his main kind of a goal in life was to teach the issues of Shmirat HaLashon, keeping your tongue pure, keeping your mouth clean, your words proper. And I can say even about myself, a person whose mouth is probably, you know, his strongest muscle and the most worked muscle, is that I don't know if we are in consonance with the incredible focus that the Torah puts on the issues of proper speech.
It's a training to the sensitivity, and I think that that's why the sages connect these Torah portions with the idea of evil speech, because what we see here in the sort of details of the law is a tremendous sensitivity to differentiate between two hairs and one hair. You know, the width of a barley corn versus the width of a wheat corn.
For these
various blemishes, right? And the color of the yolk of an egg versus the color of, you know, the yellow of the sun, etc. The tremendously fine distinctions that are the Kohanim, that the priests are being asked to make, is a training and an embodiment of the level of sensitivity that one needs to bring to speech. Because, like I said before, most people, though we may do it at times, will say, yes, lying is wrong. You know, deliberately hurting another person with your speech is wrong. But most of us, you know, give you an example. Would you think twice about praising someone who you really loved and genuinely felt was appropriate to praise because of the concern that there might be someone listening who didn't like that person, and in hearing them praised, their dislike for that person would be increased?
Well, the answer to that is actually yes. You know,
you've trained yourself,
right?
You've
trained yourself to it. Or in Judaism, it's common that people will say, let's say my boss will take me somewhere, and he'll say, well, you know, with me is Yishai, but you know, of course, I'm not going to speak in front of him, you know, his value, because that's part of the Jewish training. Or oftentimes in Jewish training, you'll meet people and you'll talk about something, and you'll be like, well, this rabbi, and I won't mention his name, did X, Y, and Z, and I didn't like that. There's a lot of times a removal of the name of the person that you may speak about for a useful purpose, but you don't want to get that person in trouble. When you're in the Jewish world, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of, but we've already kind of, it's part of our regular speech patterns.
We've been sensitized, but in many ways, we've also lost a deep sensitivity to the physical manifestation. In the same way, this is, I see as a part and parcel of exile, is that desensitization to how these intellectual and spiritual concepts are meant to be embodied, right? That our service of God is meant to be embodied in the sacrifices, that our sensitivity to speech is meant to be embodied in something like tzara'at, right? And there are many examples, right? The very idea of the embodiment of our meeting with God in the temple, which for many people is a confusing notion of the sanctity of place. This is part of exile. It's because exile is a process of disembodiment. And on one hand, that allows us to sensitize to certain things. On the other hand, we become numb to many others.
There's another component of speech which I've only become sensitized to through the readings of Rav Arush, which basically he pointed out and convinced me, I think he showed quite convincingly, that one of the biggest problems that the Torah shows in terms of speech is complaining.
Oh, yeah.
Complaining. And he shows that almost God's wrath is almost never kindled until there's a complaining. Whenever there's a complaining of the lot, instead of a thanking God for all the gifts that he's given us, whenever there's a complaint in the Torah, it's like that really kindles God's wrath. And as a parent, also, you feel that sometimes. you know, you take the kids out on a long day, you give them, you know, you take off a day of work, you drive them somewhere far, it costs a lot of money, you feed them lunch, this and that. And at the end of the day, the kid says to you, but I want ice cream. You say, but I don't want you to have ice cream for this or that reason. And then the kid starts to cry.
Everything falls apart.
Right. And you're like, wait a minute. I just gave you a full day. You do not appreciate the incredible, you know, chesed, the kindness that I've done with you all day and sacrifice on my part. And now you're going to be complaining. There's something about there's a magic, a dark magic to complaining. And that's also part of speech. And that harkens back to what I said in the beginning, which is sometimes you get a punishment or something doesn't go perfectly right for you. And we as human beings, very, very now, very, very me-centered, are like, why did this happen to me? When A, you should be thinking, well, what does this teach me? And B, maybe this has been good for me. Maybe this traffic jam has been good for me. Maybe this flat tire has just saved my life, and so on and so forth. We in that selfish moment, in that self-centered moment, we kind of negate God. We forget God. The tzaraat helps you remember what it's all about.
And it comes down to a critical choice, as you said, between gratitude and ingratitude, as expressed through complaining. And in many ways, you know, I fall on the line of, I'm not sure whether in some existential sense, the traffic jam is good or bad for me. And I can imagine saying, I avoided an accident or et cetera. But what I do know is that I have the power to make it good or bad. And that power is so often expressed, as you said, either in gratitude or complaint.
Well, speaking of gratitude, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. And I am grateful to thelandofisrael.com, founded by my friends Ari and Jeremy. Ari Brown with Jeremy Gimpel. And you can reach me at yishai@thelandofisrael.com. I also want to thank Jack, who dedicates the show to his wife Lillian and to his sister Sarah and their great families, which I miss very much and hope look forward to seeing this summer here in the land of Israel. I also want to thank the good people at Capone Defense, CaponeDefense.com, Capone, like K-A-P-O-N, Defense.com. If you want to get training, shooting, self-defense, reaction times, strengthening, your trigger finger and your mental trigger finger as well about how to deal with the challenges of defending the Jewish people and the Jewish state. Check out Avi at Capone Defense, and you'll see an amazing improvement, as I have, in training with him. And I really do believe that is part of Judaism today. Part of Zionism is not only a return to the land and a return to Judaism, but it's also a return to Jewish self-defense and the ability to return violence with our own ability to return violence with violence, but controlled and measured and accurate, so that the Jewish people will be defended and that nobody innocent will be hurt. So check out Capone Defense. And of course, I'm thankful to you, Rabbi Mike Foyer, who you join me almost every week. I was away for a little bit in D.C., but it's great to be back with you here in Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov, and that is sulamyaakov.com. Check that out. Now we're going to shift gears a little bit for the second part of Spiritual Cafe, and we're going to talk about a holiday that is happening this Shabbat. It's a very special Shabbat coming up. It's a kind of, it's all coming together this Shabbat, and that's because it's going to be Shabbat, it's going to be Rosh Chodesh, and it's going to be not just any Chodesh, but also this semi-holiday, which is its own, I don't even exactly know why it's not its own like more major holiday, but it is a major holiday in the events that happened to it in Jewish history, and that is the first day of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the month of Nisan. And it's got as I have the Rabbi Kitov book, I recommend this to everybody, the Book of Our Heritage. It comes in English and in Hebrew. It comes in small and big. You have to own the Book of Our Heritage, Jew or Gentile. And the Book of Our Heritage says the following. It says, our sages said, the first of Nisan was crowned with 10 crowns. It was the first day of creation. It was the day when the first of the princes of the tribes, Nachshon ben Aminadav, offered his sacrifice. It was the day when Aharon began his duties as Kohen, for until then the divine service had been the task of the firstborn. And then the Kohanim take over. It was the first day of the communal divine service. It was the first day that the divine fire descended from heaven. It's the first day that the sanctified portions of the sacrifices were eaten only within certain sanctified limits for when sacrifices could be offered on private altars, the sanctified portions of the offerings could be eaten anywhere. Meaning to say, in other words, that God is here, God is there, God is truly everywhere. No, now God is hanging out with God means hanging out here, and eventually only in the environs of Jerusalem. It was the first day in which God's presence dwelt amongst the people. As the verse says, I will dwell in your midst. It was the first day in which the Kohanim blessed the people with special priestly blessing. As it says, and Aharon lifted up his hands and blessed them. It's the first day on which the use of private altars became prohibited. And finally, it was the first day of the beginning of the months. And it's also the first commandment, count the start the cycle, the month, the calendar year. From this date in the land of Egypt, we get this commandment. And here we go. The clock starts here. The stopwatch starts now till Messiah.
And the thing that unites these all is the notion of chidush, that something new is born here. And it's actually quite critical. So the first item in that list there was that this was the first day of creation, right? And this is a very old machloket, a very old argument between the sages of the Mishnah, whether the world was created in Nisan or whether it was created in Tishrei, right? And the way in which we basically reconcile that is to say that the physical world was created in Nisan, and that Adam was perhaps born in Tishrei. There are other ways to look at the argument, but the key is that this whole day, and you ask, like, why doesn't it have its own holiday? And the answer, I think, is because it's part of the build-up to Passover, to Pesach, to the holiday of freedom.
Right.
Right? And it plays this critical place in understanding the role that chidush, that newness, plays in freedom.
Innovation.
Yeah, innovation, but not just innovation, something which is truly yesh me'ayin, right? That we as, something out of nothing. Right? Ex nihilo, thank you for that term. Right? We as a Jewish people have fought this
battle. I love the Latin ones.
Yeah,
I love
the
Latin
ones. It's the
I like the Latin ones and the French political ones. They're great terms. You
and you can throw them around and people are impressed.
I just love that. Entente, détente, it's great.
The reason it's so important, we as a Jewish people have fought this battle for thousands of years to
Which
argue
battle?
That the world was created something out of nothing.
Right.
Ex nihilo.
Right.
I mean, you realize that...
I thought a lightning bolt hit a mud pit and then like lizards came out and that's us.
Well, that could be as long as that in the beginning there was nothing. Meaning, don't mistake this argument with one about mechanism. Well, you and I can have the evolution discussion some other time. I've got a lot to say on that, my first degree being in geology.
Okay.
Right? But my point is that if you would ask any scientist 100 years ago, how old is the universe? They would have laughed you out of the room as a Bible-thumping fanatic. You realize that? Mm-hmm. Because they were still working on the Greek notion of the eternality of the universe, right? And so science has caught up. Right? Today, it's only an argument about how old it is, not whether it had a beginning,
wow.
Right? And the amazing thing is, what do they call that beginning? You know, what preceded the Big Bang? You know what they call it?
No.
The singularity.
The singularity.
Yes, that's when all of creation was in one thing.
Interesting.
Sound familiar? Right? Meaning, and the question that scientists don't even have the capacity to ask, much less answer, is what preceded that? What, in essence, what caused the bang? Right? And this is where we get into the difference between the perspective of the Torah and the scientists. The scientists are all about mechanism, which is a very powerful tool. Science can ask lots of questions about how, what, where, when. The one question that science doesn't really touch is... why? Right? And this is, of course, what our story is about. And it comes to the heart of why all these things here happened on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and why it's so important that it was something out of nothing.
Well, you know, time has two obvious kind of properties. One is it's circular.
Mm-hmm.
I have a watch, my Casio here, that I've worn for years. Until actually a terrorist rock knocked this exact watch off and I had to get the exact same one again. That's right. Rocks were thrown at me. It hit my wrist here, knocked my watch off, and I lost it. I got the same one. What I really like about this watch is it's got two modes. It's got the dial mode, mm-hmm. meaning to say
analog
or circular.
Right.
And time comes back again and again and again to the same meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
And then digital, i.e. from zero till.
Right.
And those are two components in time. One of the most dramatic ways to describe those two different components in time, it happens on Simchat Torah, when we celebrate the Torah, when we celebrate finishing the Torah. One part, after we finish reading the end of the five books of Moses, is that we start with Bereshit.
Right. Go right back to the beginning.
Right back to the beginning. So the circle goes around. And the second part is that we start reading from the book of Joshua. Right? We read from the book of Joshua, i.e.
moving forward.
Moving forward. Where are you taking that? And it happens exactly in the same day. I love that. I love that very much. I'm a big fan of that. And so, you know, this Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the one hand, we're coming back to Passover. We're coming back to Egypt and Exodus, and we're going to tell that story again to our children, and it goes back and forth. But there's something that could get some people as depressive in that. When it all goes around and around again, you could lose it a little bit. You could be like, well, what the hell's, you know, what's it all about?
Where are we going?
Where are we going with this? Like, we're doing this again, and so I'm going to have children, I'm going to make money, and this, that. People can get suicidal from those kind of thoughts, you know?
They're
like, you know, God forbid, of course, God forbid. On the other hand, there's the rat race. You got to move it forward. You got to move the ball forward. And this year, you know, whoever's going to say next year in Jerusalem, it means something. We're all going to say next year in Jerusalem at the Passover Seder. It means something different. We have moved along in time. Time is moving along. There's a change. We're no longer stuck. And I think we were also in the slavery of Egypt. We were stuck in a cycle. Now we're out of that cycle, and we're running. We're running towards the goal line.
This is the secret of the spiral of time, because the commandment which you mentioned, the sanctification of the moon, which is the first commandment given to the Jewish people as a whole, in many ways, it's the first step in the Exodus from Egypt. When God takes us, he first says, sanctify the moon, and then he tells us to offer the Passover sacrifice, and it's only the next stage when we actually physically leave. And that sanctification of the moon is what introduces the moon into the solar calendar, because of course the Hebrew calendar is a combination of the sun, which represents that sort of sunrise, sunset, you know, sort of unending cyclical life, and the moon, which is born, it lives, and it dies. You know, we'll talk about the fact that it's reborn again in a minute, right? But in combining them in this moment, it created the spiral of time. What do I mean? Is yes, we believe ex nihilo, God created the world, and we believe let it be soon, let it be now, we're headed for a more perfect state. There is a linear element to time, right? And yet, like you said, we're passing through the year in the points of the year in every year. So I want you to picture now that as that line moves forward, it's not just one line. Picture it as 12 parallel lines. Those are the months of the year. And as you circle through each one, you're also moving forward, and it creates a spiral. And there's that beautiful phrase in Hebrew, bayamim ha'im, Bazman hazeh, in those days, meaning that's the linear element, it was in the past, but at this time, it's the cyclical circular element, right? And the power of the spiral of time is it allows us to harness the spiritual energies which our ancestors actually experienced in history, right? Our ancestors who physically went out of Egypt also implanted within our calendar the power of liberation. So we can harness that power today and use it to move ourselves forward, right? Which is a revolution in thought, because we managed to combine the two fundamental models of the human experience of time.
I think also within this very deep thing that you just talked about is also hidden the concept of the transmigration of souls, in that we were all at Sinai, we were all in Egypt, we all left slavery and bondage, and we have to feel that way. Mm-hmm. We have to feel that way and almost use their soul-ular, right, experience to help us move forward. And I want to give you an example of that. Again, I'm coming back to the Book of Our Heritage, a simply must-have book on the Jewish bookshelf by Eliyahu Kitov. It's all about the holidays and much more. It's just, I'm telling you, I said to you a lot of times, you have to have a book. This is one of the must-have books. He writes, in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, the first signs of redemption from the Babylonian exile also appeared on the first of Nisan. It was on this day that the first group of people left to return to Jerusalem, as the verse states, and the first day of the first month was the beginning of the going up from Babel. This is in Ezra 7:9. We also find, and it was in the month of Nisan, and he, Nehemiah, received permission to ascend to Jerusalem and rebuild the city and its walls, and the king sent officers and horsemen to accompany him. That's in Nehemiah 2:1. Just as the second redemption began on the first of Nisan, so too did it reach fulfillment on that day. Those who returned from Babylonia could not be considered fully redeemed until they had purified themselves of the influence of the nations amongst who they had sojourned, and until they had separated themselves from their foreign wives. Ezra and his associates directed their attention to this purpose as the verse states, and they sat down on the first day of the 10th month to examine the matter, and all the men sent back their heathen wives by the first day of the first month. Thus, when the following Nisan began, the people's redemption was complete, both physically and spiritually.
And there's another important underlying factor, which we haven't mentioned. You know, the tabernacle, which we spent all those weeks speaking about not so long ago, was finished being constructed on what day, do you know?
A few days before Rosh Chodesh Nisan.
No, on the 25th of Kislev.
That's right, Hanukkah.
Hanukkah,
that's
months
right.
ago.
That's right.
Months ago it was finished, and then God said to Moshe, now wait. So the sages teach us that the people were devastated. They thought, Moshe, maybe there's something wrong. Moshe, maybe we didn't do it right. Moshe, maybe God doesn't love us. And he said, no, we're waiting. For what? For the month in which Yitzchak was born. What does that mean? Why was God waiting for the month in which Yitzchak was born in order to inaugurate the actual service in the Mishkan?
Well, the servitude of Egypt was counted from the time that Yitzchak was born 400 years.
Absolutely. And 430.
Altogether.
Yeah. So, but the key is understanding what Yitzchak represents. His name, of course, means laughter, right? And, you know, laughter in many ways is the greatest expression of freedom that a person can have, right? I mean, just think about it, just emotionally, the freedom of, I'm just going to laugh it off. You know, like there's situations that my wife and I often say to each other as parents, well, you can either laugh or cry, you know, you know, so let's go with the laughter since it's a lot, not just more pleasant, you know, because the power, the laughter of Yitzchak is founded in the laughter of a man who's 99 years old, whose wife is 90. When God announces to Abraham, your wife, Sarah, she's going to have a child. She's been barren for 90 years. And Abraham laughs. He doesn't laugh as a derisive, yeah, whatever. He laughs because why? Because God has revealed to him that the world is not as he thought it was. That everything which has preceded this moment doesn't bind the next moment. The past doesn't dictate the future. That there's absolute freedom in the hands of God. And it's given over to Abraham in the person of Yitzchak. Yitzchak represents the fact that it's true. Listen, most of the time in life, things roll along. And the past, in many ways, does determine the present. But, and this is, by the way, in terms of our other discussions, this is one of the great things I believe the Zionists understood better than any other portion of Am Yisrael in their day. With a caveat that they didn't respect the past, but they understood that they could not let the past define their future. Right? And so, therefore, they freed themselves. With, again, like I said, there's damage that was done there as well. But in the same way that God says, listen, you want to meet me in the Mishkan? The last thing God wants is for us to put him in a box. We spent all this time making the box. It's beautiful. It's holy. It took a lot of work. So, like, you know, we want God in the box. And please just stay there. God says, listen, I want to dwell within you, not in the box. You can meet me there. And so, therefore, we're going to wait till Nisan, until that month of laughter, of total freedom, of realizing, yes, the past got you to the present, but it doesn't dictate the future. And that's how I want you to come to me new every single day.
Renewal. Renewal is a very powerful concept. And Rabbi Nachman of Breslov had a concept that a person, when he's down in the dumps, should just basically, you're talking about laughter, he would just say, I just got born. I was just born right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be able to say, you know what? I was, my sins are gone. I'm a brand new baby right now. However, I have with me my experiences. But I'm starting right now. And it even says about him that there were a few days that he had started anew some 17 times. We need to say there was a few days in his life where he just was like, I'm starting again. Nope, that didn't start right. Start again. And that ability to restart is a very important concept in Rabbi Nachman's Torah. And not to get stuck with depression, with whatever. You know the worst form of depression I have seen. I don't know if the worst form. I don't know if I need to use that term. But a horrible catalyst for depression is the sense that people have that they've messed it up. They're
yes.
ruined.
Yes.
It's unfixable, unsalvageable. You're playing Super Mario Brothers, and the game, and you know how to play it well, but you messed up, so you're like, forget it.
It's basically over now.
It's over
matter.
Now. It doesn't, even though I have another whatever, I already messed it up, and it's not going to be all the way perfect. So therefore, you know, I'm not going to finish the race. I'm not going to be in the top three spots. So I'm just dropping out.
And this is why the sages teach us tshuva kadma la'olam, that the idea of repentance actually preceded creation. It's a little bit bizarre. We usually think of repentance as a makeup. Like, okay, I blew it, so God's nice to me, he lets me repent. Right? In which case, if that were true, then I would always be left with the sense that, yeah, but repentance is second best. Because, okay, God's being nice to me, but I blew it. So the sages say, no. Repentance preceded the world, meaning that the idea of being able to free oneself from the past and step into a new relationship is what creation is about. Right? And that's why I said it's so important that we fight that battle that the world was created something out of nothing, because it's the nothingness, the chaos, which preceded it that gives us real freedom. So I make a mistake, whatever that mistake may be, and I decide, you know what? I'm not just going to say I'm sorry for that mistake. I'm going to say I am no longer the person who did that. Now, that doesn't mean I divest myself of responsibility, because, of course, real repentance means actually fixing the mistake to the extent that I can, owning it, and like you said, owning my experience. At the same time, owning my experience without letting it define me, right? Because I am new in every moment, and it's a tremendously powerful way of walking in the world, and it's the key step in the freedom that we're after on Pesach.
There's a listener who I'm specifically thinking about. He knows who he is, who's been through a lot of hardships, a lot of pains. And I think even a few periods of renewal, and yet even that got destroyed somehow. Mm. And he feels that life is over, that he cannot renew himself again. And I wanna give him a lot of strength right now through the show, through the prayer of everybody listening to the show, that our friend, his name starts with A, is going to have that renewal. And that God will shine his face upon him and to him, and that he will sense that life can't go on. He's incredibly talented. He's incredibly gifted, but he's also been dealt a rough set of cards. But his goodness and God's goodness is going to overcome all of those challenges. But we have to have it through faith, through that sense of renewal.
Amen.
Rabbi Mike Foyer, I want to wish you amen, and I want to wish you a happy new month of Nisan. May we have great beginnings. And new beginnings and new paths. At the same time, continue to strengthen our path of Spiritual Cafe here and continue to record together for another great year and season. So happy Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi Mike.
Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Yishai.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned. Spiritual Cafe is the first part of our program. We're going to keep going here on the Yishai Fleischer Show, thelandofisrael.com. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Stay tuned, stay strong, and stay connected, and Shalom. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, and I hope you enjoyed that interview with Rabbi Mike Foyer on Spiritual Cafe. I love Rabbi Mike, and thank you so much for giving me a chance to sit down with him and to broadcast some of that incredible Torah. It's so important for us to get connected to the real source of energy here in the land. And we also have to broadcast it out. We can't just keep it for ourselves. That's what this show, the Yishai Fleischer Show on the Land of Israel Network, is all about. And also with this incredible place that I work in called Hebron, the Jewish community of Hebron, where courage and the broadcasting of courage reigns supreme. In the next part of the show, we're going to be at the Israel Video Network Awards ceremony. What is the Israel Video Network? Where you're going to learn all about it with the interviews that I did on site at the Tower of David Museum at an incredible awards ceremony for people who are trying to broadcast the message of Israel. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are listening to the Land of Israel Network. I'm here with one of the co-founders of the Land of Israel Network, Ari Abramitz. Ari, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Yishai Fleischer. I'm one of the founders. We're both founders. Neither of us are co-founders. Get it straight, Yishai.
Right. Good call. Okay, now we are in a magical evening out together. You're actually wearing a sports jacket. I'm wearing a tie. And we are in one of the most beautiful scenes that you can imagine here in the Land of Israel, especially in Jerusalem. We're in the Tower of David complex, and there's these ancient gates, ancient walls. They're all lit up so beautifully. The moon is out. The stars are out. It's a warm yet a little bit cool evening. You've got a cup of white wine in your hand, and we are at an awards ceremony. The awards ceremony is for the Israel Video Network. The Israel Video Network is really a premier organization here in the Land of Israel, started by our friends, two Avis, Avi Nadel and Avi Abelow, And this organization came up with an idea to have a contest to make the best videos that will promote the story of Israel. And tonight, that best video is going to be chosen. There's going to be a grand prize of $7,500. But more than that, it's been a lot of respect and a lot of coverage. These movies, these short films have been seen by hundreds of thousands, covered in the Washington Post. And you, Ari Abramowitz, founder, one of the founders of the Land of Israel Network, are the MC tonight. That's a pretty big honor.
It is an honor. I'll tell you, if the Land of Israel Network, if we're, let's say, the tanks in a war, they're artillery. Meaning we're fighting the same war, we just have different roles in it. And it's a complementary role. And these guys, they could have done anything. These are brilliant guys. And instead, they committed their lives to doing exactly what we're doing, which I believe is the calling of our generation, which is to project a powerful, dignified, truthful, inspired message out of Israel to the world. So I, when they asked me to do it, I'm honored, of course.
You know, Ari, a lot of people are involved here in the Land of Israel in medicine, in biotech, in creating a better sneaker or helping people who are paraplegics walk again, or creating a little pill that you swallow and has a little camera inside. I know you like that a lot. And it's also a land filled with Torah. There are educators. There are people who teach Judaism. But you and I and the people in this beautiful evening are involved in this, what you mentioned before, this broadcasting, the sending out the message. Well, we couldn't send out the message if there wasn't a message to send. There are people who are doing the stuff, and we're kind of covering it, sending it to the world. But I wanted you to elaborate a little bit about the issue of broadcasting to the world, because the world is broadcasting on Israel. As much as we're doing good stuff, there's a lot of dross, a lot of garbage, a lot of trash that's being heaped on Israel. And here we are countering that with showing that light that is emanating from Israel.
You asking me this question is like Mr. Miyagi asking Daniel-san to talk about karate. I mean, you were the one that introduced me to what the Jewish people can do, what our responsibility is in our times, what the potential is in our times. The whole world has their eyes on Israel right now. And what are we doing? We're projecting these sort of half apologetic whispers of truth and technology rather than just simply sharing the message of truth and justice and that God gave us this land. The world is waiting to hear it. They're waiting to hear it. And it's just a matter of the Jewish people to listen. It's one thing taking the Jewish people out of the exile. It's another thing taking the exile out of the Jewish people. And we've returned to the Land of Israel. Now it's time to let our souls connect with this land and project an inspirational message that the world is waiting and thirsty to hear.
All right, Ari, I am waiting and thirsty to hear your emceeing of tonight's beautiful evening. We're at the Tower of David. The night is perfect. And it's the Israel Video Network Contest Awards Ceremony. Ari, good luck. Can't wait to hear you.
Shem shall bless you. Thank you.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. We're at the awards ceremony of the Israel Video Network, and I'm here with a new star, right? A new star in the Land of Israel. I might be exaggerating a tad, but I don't think so, actually. This fine lady with a great name, Solange, which is a French name, we'll get to you in a second, is now a massive scoper. And as scoper, what is scoping? Scoping is periscoping. Periscoping is a new technology that you're doing live video. As I'm interviewing you, you are holding a selfie stick, and there are 59 people and many a stars that are
around the view here on the Tower of David. Yeah, I'm actually scoping. I have started just like this, and I ended up having 20,000 followers. I have no idea how this happened. I got into trendings, which is like the top list of Periscope. And I find myself showing the beauty of Israel and especially the holy city of Jerusalem, which is fantastic because a lot of people discover the city and they have no idea what it looks like and how people live here. So instead of, you know, reporting all the bad news that we hear from the media, I can show beautiful stuff. I can show people in the street. I can show their life, day-to-day life, and explain about the history of this country. A lot of people have absolutely no knowledge. And when they have knowledge, they have knowledge from the internet, which is very often completely biased. And one of the reasons I started scoping is because I want people to know the truth. I want them to learn about this country and the history and not from the media. So I think Periscope is a fantastic tool because it provides you live streaming from Israel directly to people around the world without going through all the fake media. You know, it's fantastic, fantastic tool. And I love my followers. Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I can't read your comments right now. I see they're watching me. They're commenting. Hello from France. You be blessed, Israel. Do you consider us a Christian gamer? No, I'm not. Shalom. Awesome experience to see a country without traveling. Yeah, that's the beauty. You know, you can be watching Hawaii in the morning and an hour later watching Israel, and in the same minute scoping and watching, you know, skipping to another country around the world.
Solange, I detect in your accent, in your name, and also in the shape of your glasses, a certain French background. Tell me a little bit about how you got to this. Now, I understand that you're actually a teacher. You're a computer teacher. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually a computer scientist. Yeah, I got into scoping just like that, just randomly. Actually, I was invited here as a guest scientist, and I, instead of spending 6 months, I actually stayed 20 years. That's the story, you know. So that's me. I just fell in love with the people, with this place. I was not specifically religious or anything like that. I didn't grow up in a religious background or a community. But I ended up falling in love with the people, mostly the people. I think this country is amazing, really amazing. The diversity and the rich and the energy is special. This is something you have nowhere in the world. That's why I fell up, I ended up staying here.
Solange, tell me about this evening tonight. Right now, as we're talking, there's a lot of people. I got to say hi to everybody. This is me, Yishai Fleischer. That's right. I'm on your, that's right. She says, Yishai should scope more often. It's true. It's true. Solange, just tell me about this evening. It's a special evening. We're in a beautiful place here at the Tower of David. There's an award ceremony for the best video. Did you vote for the videos? Are you excited to be here?
Yeah, there was a fantastic contest called Israel Video Network, the name of the website, which is Avi Abelov's website. And there were some awesome videos. You guys have to go onto that website. It's called Israel Video Networks. I personally voted. I think there were a lot of fantastic videos, and I think it shows how people care about around the world about this country, and we really need the support from all the people. That's something we really miss here. We feel a lot that the media are criticizing Israel, bullying, how do you say, in Israel, and we need really the people to support us. So the Israel video, this video network contest was fantastic, because you realize that a lot of people actually are supporting Israel, and that makes us feel really good, you know. That makes us like we want to show the world our beautiful country.
All right, Solange, we are now being called downstairs to actually go to the ceremony. I want to thank you so much. How do people follow you? How do people find your scopes?
Oh, you go on Periscope and you just look for Solange Jerusalem Live, and you'll find me, I guess.
Very good. Jerusalem Live, that's exactly what we are. We are live from Jerusalem. I say goodbye to everybody on your... Yishai Fleischer. Yishai Fleischer, just that very simple. All right, everybody, thanks so much. We're going to keep going with the Israel Video Network contest. Thank you, Solange. All right, folks, we're here at the Israel Video Network contest. I'm here with one of the founders of the Israel Video Network, Avi Nadel. Avi, I've worked with you for many years, and now you are at the Israel Video Network. Tonight is a very special night in a very special place with a lot of very special films. Tell me about the genesis of this project, the Israel Video Network.
Oh, wow. Well, first off, Avi Abelow has had the idea of showing the positive end of Israel through video for many, many years. I joined up and partnered with Avi Abelow a while back, but he's had these ideas for a long time, including this contest, and his whole idea was to show the positive end of Israel, connect people to Israel through entertaining videos, inspiring videos, and there's nothing that, you know, does it better than short, quick, inspiring videos about Israel, where people are trying to just do it quickly in a minute or two, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And we just started up because we saw that there was a need for getting the word out on Facebook, especially, and in general, through everything that the internet was allowing us to do, that in the past, we just simply couldn't reach the masses worldwide. So we just met and put it together, and thank God we're now having our hopefully first annual TechS gathering for the celebration of the winners of the Israel Video Contest.
Avi, give me a little bit of sense of numbers. How many people have seen the videos of this contest? Just give me some rough estimate of what we're talking about in terms of exposure.
Okay. This contest featured 90 plus videos, a total of more than 500,000 views of these videos were counted. And of course, the most popular videos were the ones that got the tens of thousands of views. And some of them even got over 100,000 plus views. And so we're not talking about a nice size. We're talking about a massive size. And that's just during the contest. Following the contest in the future, we think these videos will get viewed by hundreds of thousands of people, and if not millions of people. And that's the power of a viral video.
And it's also the power of unleashing other people's creativity. It's not like you had to be a creative house yourself. You've actually given the platform for others. You've given them the opportunity to create. You kind of tapped into something that was there. People wanted an excuse to create it, and they wanted a platform for it. You made both of those.
Exactly. That's one of the things that Avi Ablo always had in his head, is he always saw that there was creativity that was just being waiting to just come out. And I must say, we had slight concerns that we would only get a few good videos. We knew we'd get a bunch of videos. We didn't know how good the quality would be, but thank God we really saw that there's tremendous creativity on many different continents. And we're here to celebrate the winners. We'll see who they are soon.
So let's go downstairs now. The contest, the winners are about to be announced, and you and I are standing outside in beautiful Tower of David. What a romantic and beautiful setting this is. It's a special night for special people that have come back to this land, yet so maligned, so much trash, and tonight is the opposite. Tonight is a night of light, of great videos that show the story of Israel, and it's all happening at the Israel Video Network Contest. Thank you so much, Avi.
Thank you, Yishai. Thanks so much.
Hillel Fuld is one of Israel's preeminent tech writers. I don't even know exactly how to say what you do. You're just letting the whole world know about Israeli technology and startups. How would you define your job?
Well, I'm starstruck talking to Yishai Fleischer right now. So, yeah, but I do marketing. I wear a lot of different hats. I help startups grow. I help startups go global and not get stuck here in Israel in terms of their marketing, their message. Just try to help the Israeli ecosystem as much as I can.
Now, you are also, you have a huge follower on Twitter. You're very well known in the social media sphere. With this high-tech bubble and the innovation of this country, you've kind of ridden it and taught people about it. You were also chosen to be one of the judges for tonight's Israel Video Network Contest. You had to judge between great films, about 90 of them. Tell me a little bit about the process.
So, you know, if I were to sum up my life and my career, it's the intersection of, Israel and technology. And so this is, I guess, this encompasses it all. This is Israel and technology. And so it was a natural fit for me to come here and judge this contest. And I've watched some of the videos. They brought tears to my eyes, many of them. And so, yeah, we got some amazing people in the house, like Yishai Fleischer, like Ari over here. We got a lot of amazing people. And I'm honored to be here and be part of this.
All right. So what are we going to be expecting tonight? Are we going to see all the films? Are we going to go over them again? Did you have one that, like, you don't have to tell me, of course, which one, but was there one that said to you, this is the one?
There were several of them that really, really did bring tears to my eyes. Yeah, one or two of them definitely stood out to me. Hopefully you'll get a glimpse of some of them, and get the tissues ready, my friend. Get the tissues ready.
Hillel Fuld, how do people follow you and learn more about Israel's incredible technology, which is not just shtick. It's really changing the world and bringing betterment to the world. I see you're wearing a very high-tech watch, and you're sharing Israel's technology, which is oftentimes so much. It's not just social media. It's not just parking or driving. It's actually making the world a better place.
Yeah, I think my goal really is to get the point across that there's not two Israels. There's Israel, the tech superpower, and there's Israel, the moral, ethical nation. There's no two Israels. We need the investors of the world and the tech people of the world to understand that. That's really what I'm all about. How to find me? Hilzfuld, Hills Fold. Instead of Hillel, Hills. On Twitter, on Snapchat, on Instagram, on Facebook, everywhere. Hills Fold.
All right, Hillel, and thanks so much for judging tonight at the Israel Video Network Contest.
Thank you.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, and I just came out from the Israel Video Network Awards. It was an emotional night because I got to see a lot of films that people put their hearts into, including a video that won grand prize, which was all about Israel's incredible medical volunteerism, flying all around the world, helping people in disaster areas. It was a beautiful movie put together from a lot of the footage that we've all seen, but in one kind of emotional track. And that won a grand prize. But for me, in my heart, I can't help it. I've got my own brother, and I stand with him. And I also thought that my brother, Josh Fleischer, along with his friend Shlomo Weprin, created a film that just blew the socks off of everybody. And I know that he won first prize. And I know that when he won that first prize, you know, a lot of people were like, man, he should have won that grand prize. But you know what? It really doesn't matter, because that movie got out to hundreds of thousands of people. It's been covered already in the Washington Post, as I recall, certainly in the Jerusalem Post. It's been around the world. The makers have become well-known, and the artists, because this movie is actually about these two artists who have taken it upon themselves to walk around the Shuk, the outdoor market in Jerusalem, and to paint famous people on the slats, the metal doorways that close the Shuk at night. But now, instead of it being kind of closed and dark and dreary, it's actually full of light and full of the inspiring people that have made this world a better place. Josh Fleischer, I want to congratulate you on winning first place.
Thank you so much, Ishai. It's a great honor.
It is a great honor. Tell me a little bit about your movie. Here's what my friend Alex, our mutual friend Alex Trayman, said to me. He said, what's amazing about that film is that they went and they covered it as it was happening. They really did a documentary style. They followed these two artists as they were doing their work for a long time.
So inspiring, the artists going out there. It's two guys making Jerusalem even more beautiful, places that might seem a little bit dark and dingy at night, a little bit scary to walk through if you ever lived in the Shuk, which I did. It's a place now that's full of light, and it's really a microcosm for what's happening in Israel in general. There's a revolution. There's people coming home, and it was great to work with them.
Here's what I want to ask you. I want to ask you about your visual thing, because his visual thing, everybody can go and see at the Shuk, but you also did a visual thing. You took incredible photography. There was smoke. There was, like, you were walking through it. It was like a maze. Tell me a little bit about your craft for a little bit.
Well, it's amazing. Shlomo Weprin and I are artists. We are video filmmakers. And, you know, one night we went out there at 2 a.m. and we rented a drone and we flew it in the Shuk. And there's three shots in the whole video of the drone, because we crashed it basically 7 or 8 minutes into filming. First we crashed it, cracked the lens, and made that cool smoky effect. And then we crashed it for real, and that's it.
Rachi Zima is a journalist. You've covered this for the Jerusalem Post. You've covered this story, and the story actually went pretty viral itself. The story also went viral, not just the video, not just the art, but also the story itself. Tell me a little bit about your coverage of the video and the artist that you found through it.
So the stories and the videos are really what's so inspiring, because not only are these incredible heroines, both known and unknown, and heroes in the Shuk portrayed, but the people who are doing the work itself are part of this story of heroism. And covering it is so easy, because you just go to the Shuk and you watch. And almost every night, both Beryl Han and Solomon Souza, the artist and visionary involved in this project, are there working tirelessly and aimlessly to continue their work, with so much direction and so much passion for what they do. And seeing them think about their craft, seeing them involved in each spray of a can, is so beautiful to capture. And I think that's what makes the video so special too, because it truly identifies with the artistic craft involved in every step of the way.
Amazing. And you've just come home to the land of Israel very recently. You're already working for the Jerusalem Post. Welcome home.
Thank you, but not yet working. Right now, just trying to work.
Well, it's going to work, and you're going to come back home, and you're going to see the deep roots are going to happen for you here in the land of Israel. Beryl Han, your name is Beryl Han. That, like, reminds me of all kinds of connotations. You are a big and tall Jew. You're also an artist. You've got a dreamy look in your eye, because you've got some kind of vision of different things than other people see. Tell me a little bit about your project of beautifying the Shuk, and also putting in images of incredible people who've changed this world.
All right, so first of all, it was just a vision of color on a Shabbat afternoon, and then a vision of people. Over Shabbat, the concept developed, and then after Shabbat, I spoke to Solomon Souza. First of all, he does all the painting. I'm not a painter. And it turned into a vision where we want to establish a Shuk as a venue on Shabbat, where it all comes together. All the different, you know, flavors, all the, you know, the multiplicity of Jewish ethnicity, from Ethiopian to Georgian to Bukharian. It's focusing on the universal aspects of our culture, our food, our fashion, our song, and our story, which is portrayed through the art. So we've been working on it step by step with all the resources we have on hand. And the concept to paint faces, it kind of developed itself, where shop owners were like, the first one was Rav Ovadia. Ani rotzeh Rav Ovadia. Then this one wanted Rav Kaduri. This one Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. And they all wanted faces. And then secular people are saying, hey, why are you only painting rabbis? And the women are like, hey, where are the women at? So then we started really opening up the history books, and many incredible people were giving us suggestions. And also, in the beginning, it was really tough to get it off the ground. And a friend of ours was like, listen, I'll give you a few hundred shekels, buy some paint, show them what you're capable of. And we dedicated a piece to his incredible parents, one of whom is so far painted in the Shuk. And he was touched and decided he wanted to dedicate the project towards them. And he donated even more paint. And then his boss donated more paint and his brother donated paint. So it's been really humbling and also very moving. Like this contest made us aware of the support that exists. Like, we've been struggling. We really keep it together and really take the vision to the next level. Because right now, people say, where are the plaques? Where are the plaques? So what we want to do is put, you know, QR codes and the RFDI chip so people can get the information behind the painting on their phone. And giving tours has been a lot of fun because the tour participants become the guides. I end up learning more about each character from the people who I'm giving a tour to. So originally the intention was just color, beauty, people, and inspiration and meaning, and try to make it meaningful in some way.
Beryl Hahn, I want to thank you very much. I think that many more words are not necessary. People have to go and see it for themselves at the Shuk. And it's the Machane Yehuda Marketplace, outdoor marketplace in Jerusalem. Daytime, it's shopping. Nighttime, it's art and it's music and it's food and it's an awesomeness. Thank you very much for what you do. Thank you for that inspiring story. And I want to thank Josh Fleischer and Shlomo Weppern and wish you guys a mazal tov for your first place victory here at the Israel Video Network Award Ceremony. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you so much, Yishai. Keep on rocking on.
All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed my time with the good people that are making incredible videos happen and spreading them out to the world at the Israel Video Network Awards Ceremony at the Tower of David. It was beautiful, and it was fun, and it was inspiring. Next time, I want you to be there as well. When are you going to make the movie that's going to change the face of Israel and broadcast the message of light to the world? I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Well, how am I going to hear about that if you don't write me an email? Write me an email at Yishai, well, not at Yishai, Yishai at thelandofisrael.com, Yishai at thelandofisrael.com. I'm on Twitter picking fights every day, so check me out over there. Also on Facebook, showing beautiful pictures of the land of Israel, on LinkedIn, on YouTube. I don't know, every way possible, almost every way, we're trying to reach out to the world with the story of Israel. And the most important thing is that you stay connected, not only to stay connected with this show or the Land of Israel Network, even not with only with Hebron and the land of Israel in general, but with the whole story of Israel, with the God of Israel. He's the big boss. It's all about him, and he's bringing the Jewish people back home, and he's strengthening us and helping us be a light unto the nations with your help. Be part of his story, and stay tuned, because we're going to keep on broadcasting here on thelandofisrael.com, and with your help, it's going to keep on going. It's going to keep going on. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected, and shalom.